Hello and welcome to this week's Subject to a Rebranding Total Rugby League show. And we're joined here at League Express HQ on a drizzly Wednesday afternoon in West Yorkshire. Surprising, really. Martin Sadler's here, Aaron Bower's here, and Matthew Shaw is here. Welcome, everybody. So, hello and welcome, everybody, to the show. A preview for this weekend's Super League action coming your way shortly, plus, of course, the Championship and League One roundup as well. And speaking of League One, Hector McNeil from London Scholars, the ultimate dark horses of this season, will be coming on the show later as well. But before that, and we had one of those media briefings again last week. They're all the rage. Mr. Robert Elston of Super League fame was there. Was anyone around this table there? I didn't ask you before this. Oh, Aaron, you were there.
Martin, you were there.
How were the sandwiches?
Were you there, Matt?
I wasn't invited.
Oh my goodness. Well,
I was not invited. I was snubbed.
Yeah.
That ego was dented.
You're on enough.
They were terrified of the questions you would have asked.
My ego is still being licked better.
So there was a few matters arising from the meeting. I started off the show with a joke. Rebranding.
That's the theme word.
Have we seen what the rebranding is?
No, not yet. No, Robert Elston has appointed a couple of firms that were originally involved in the rebranding of the Premier League, Football Premier League, and they are looking at it. I don't quite know what the timetable is, but I think they're having a workshop, aren't they?
Yeah.
Is it this week or next week? Which I assume is a workshop of all the clubs to look at some of the underlying issues and some of the suggestions that that these companies might make. So, you know, no doubt in the fairly near future we might find something out. But I tend to think, though, that rebrands tend to be kept secret until they want to be launched. You know, I don't think they're going to consult many people on
it. When we say rebrand, like name change?
Well, I don't think it'll be a name change. I can't see...
They can't change the name of Super League, can
they? It'll be
an image refresh.
Too well established for that. But they can change the image. Robert Elston's been talking about, you know, the sort of clutter involved, for example, with, you know, the way clubs appear on the field. You know, if you compare Super League clubs with Premiership football clubs, the shirts look extremely cluttered and they look as though they could be from virtually any competition. They're not clearly themed as Super League, are they?
Would we like to see that branding on pitches as well? Because that's often...
Well, I think so. You know, the funny thing is that when Super League was first launched, the pitches were sort of decorated far more than they are now. You know, you had the branding on the grid lines, you know, 20 metres, 30 metres, 50 metres, halfway line and so on. And then you had, you know, various logos in the middle of the field. That's fallen away a lot, partly because so many clubs share their stadiums with football clubs that when you put logos on a field, it's sometimes hard to get them off if there's another team playing the following day in a different sport. But the fact is that rugby league pitches look a bit bare. You know, if you look at most of the major sports, American football, you know, football itself, the pitches look much more clearly brand identifiable, I think, anyway, and Super League doesn't.
Other areas. By the way, is that going to be done for next season, or is it in terms of? Other areas raised. Two referees still very keen
on that. Robert Elston very keen on that. Yeah, and you get the feeling he's going to get his own way eventually, don't you? Because he's really pushing it. So if Rob doesn't get it, then it'll be a bad news.
Excuse my ignorance. I know they do it in Australia, but why?
Why are we going to do it?
Yeah, why do we need two referees?
Because
they do it in Australia. I suppose that makes perfect sense, in all fairness.
I don't think it's going to make a massive amount of difference, if I'm being honest. I think there's too much focus on referees already.
I was talking to Gary Hetherington about this the other day, and he was saying he went over to Australia and spoke to their top guy, Graham Annesley, and... You know, he said, can you tell me about two referees? And Annesley said to him, well, what system do you want to talk about? He says, well, what do you mean, what system? He says, well, there are several different ways of having two referees. We've tried about three already. And basically what he meant was that when they first started this in Australia, the two referees were 50-50. Both had equal importance and equal discretion on the field. They've now moved to a point where it's 80-20. So one referee, you know, is the 80% man The other is the 20% man. So it's very clear who's the boss.
I think that just confuses
but
how
everybody.
How does that even work if you don't have level power? Then surely the one with more control has the final say.
Where do they stand next to him? Or
well, one's the, like the stand at either side of the rock, don't they?
Smithers, Mr. Burns, just, kind
of. I'm with Aaron. I'm with Aaron on this massively. I think we put so much focus on referees and decisions. I think what we need to do is put more focus on the gamesmanship that's going on in rugby league. I think we did that last week with the rule changes, which was a massive step forward. But still think we're in a position where there is cheating in the, you saw it in games this week where ball carriers are locking limbs up to stop players from getting out and flopping around like beach whales on the floor trying to win a penalty. That's the thing that needs to be put in focus.
That's right. The key act of gamesmanship we're seeing at the moment, and we saw it last weekend, is players getting up to play the ball. Somebody just sort of brushes them and they fall over.
Yeah.
You know, as though they're being fouled trying to play the ball and get a penalty. So there's always going to be this sort of thing in the game, unfortunately.
I suppose that 20% referee isn't going to really help in that regard.
Well, maybe not. Anyway, who knows?
Moving along, and the other item that was talked about in the press as well was the quota on foreign teams. Now, obviously, we're reaching a stage now where in the next couple of years we could have three foreign teams. It's right that it's looked at and talked about in that regard, isn't it? Because otherwise, it could, you know, increasingly be more a overseas league than an English league.
That's not the issue, I don't think. I don't think there'd be an issue from Super League's perspective if it was eight foreign teams and four English teams. The concern is what sort of an impact it's going to have on the TV deal from 2021 onwards. That if you have Toulouse, Toronto, Catalans and New York in by 2021, Sky could turn around and say, well, that's four teams there who we aren't going to be able to sell any subscriptions to, so we're cutting your deal by a third. So the concern is obviously A, having a quota to protect that, and then that, you know, B, any fourth team that wants to come in have to bring something to the table to offset the likely loss of income and revenue. And I think there's been a lot of ridiculous crowing about Super League stance on that, but I think they're well within the rights to do it.
I think it's a very valid point as well, and I'll tell you why. When Catalans came in, they were supposed to help get a better TV deal. I don't think they've ever done that, so there's rightly some scepticism there. And if you were to throw another three in, would they do that?
Now, it's going to be two next year, isn't it? You're going to get short odds on it being
Toronto or anyone other than those two.
Yeah, I agree. So in that regard. You do understand why they're wary in that. I do think at the same time, the sport has to do more to make sure that let's say Toronto more than Toulouse come in, that they get a very, very strong deal. And then they need to find a way to also collaborate the two so that everyone benefits from
because
the two
Toronto
TV
don't
deals.
Have a deal at the minute. They just pay our host broadcaster to show their games, which isn't what we're looking for.
No.
We're looking for more money, aren't we?
Correct. Yeah. Although I understand why they are paying. Because they think that because all of that
brand exposure, giving brand them profile,
and obviously they think off the back of that, if all, because this is getting housed in God knows how many homes around the world, that they can get a TV deal off the fact that they know what the product is.
This whole discussion, though, is based on the premise that Super League will remain at 12 clubs, and of course that's a ridiculous premise, really, because if you're going to get four overseas clubs in Super League, you actually what you need to do is increase the number of teams to 16, I would say. I've got an article in Rugby League World at the moment that makes that very point. You know, it'd be crazy keeping it at 12 with four overseas clubs for reasons Aaron has already explained.
I think 14's the panacea.
Well, I'd like to see 14 in 2021 for the simple reason that you'd then get 26 games.
Yeah, that's why I'd go for 14.
In a World Cup year.
I just think fixture scheduling's is best with 14. I think if you're at the minute you're 16, you've then got 30 regular
matches. You wouldn't play every team home and away with a 16 team.
Well, what would you do, though?
Well, it's too complicated to explain in a short while, but
conference.
There are lots of, something like that. Yeah.
I just think 14's
a good number.
And at this moment in time, I don't think there's 16 teams that are worthy of being
no,
in Super.
No, neither do I, but you don't know what's going to happen in the future.
No, of course not.
Those were the three major talking points I saw. Was there anything else other than the sausage rolls? Was it all good?
Nothing else.
Those are the major points.
But again, that's the second media briefing in a month, one from the RFL, one from Super League, and that's positive.
It's becoming a habit. Well, it's good, isn't it, in the sense that, you know, Robert Elston's been busy building up his Super League administration since he was appointed in June last year. And he's now at the point where they've moved into new premises near Piccadilly Station in Manchester. They're very proud, you know, Robert's very proud of what they've moved into. He's really pleased with what they've got, and they're appointing new people. We were introduced, weren't we, to quite a few of their staff. The new communications director is going to be none other than James Peacock. But not that James Peacock, a guy who's joining them from the BBC, you know, who's got a famous name. So let's hope he's as good off the field as Jamie was on it.
Let's talk about the matches then coming up this weekend. And we'll start off with the Thursday night game, which is taking place. And it's quite an intriguing game, really. It's Wigan against London. And it's going to be on TV. Before we get to the match, can we talk about Wigan v Castleford and how that's probably written off the idea of a doubleheader over Easter? Because that was a very sluggish game, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think it was as bad as some people suggested, but, you know, the majority opinion was that it was a terrible, terrible game. It was played in horrible conditions, and it was, you know, it was the third game at Easter, and you could see it, couldn't you? You could see that the players were pretty shattered. Some more than others, I thought, you know. I thought Joe Burgess on the wing looked absolutely exhausted the whole game.
The conditions played a part, but I don't think it should shy away from the fact that it was a poor game. And I think it did...
I think it
did emphasise the fact that this Easter weekend needs to be evaluated. I really do think that. I don't buy into this suggestion that the clubs know what they're signing up for with Easter. They should prepare for it. Just not a fan of that idea.
From a spectacle point of view as well, you've got those highs of the whole derby and the Wigan Saints match.
Well, you're brought down to earth.
Let's see what happens this week with soft tissue injuries. Because I can guarantee there'll be more than normal this week. And the other thing, I thought Mick Hogan's suggestion on Backchat last week was brilliant, and I think it's something that could be looked at. Mm. He said make it an Easter week, where his idea was that each day over Easter, the one competition was the competition in focus, Super League one day, Championship one day, League One another. I'm not quite sure I'd do that, because I don't think League One's going to get the broadcast exposure to make that work. Probably not the Championship.
And putting Super League all on one day is ridiculous.
Yeah, I think you could have an Easter week, and I think you could try and do it and schedule it so that people could get to as many games as possible, and you could have a bit of a bandwagon. I think there is potential for that to work.
I mean, it's great having the derbies, isn't it, at Easter? But if you had one on Thursday night, one on Friday, one on Saturday, one on Sunday, the Hull derby being played roughly the same time as the Wigan Saints derby. You know, two massive games, but people in the media could only go to one of them.
Easter's is just... This is, for me, this round coming up is the most underwhelming round of the year, irrespective of the games, for two reasons.
I thought last weekend was, actually.
Oh, well, I clubbed the last weekend into Easter, so yeah. I always think this weekend, I've had too much rugby league in too short a space of time, and the Challenge Cup's back next week with all the big teams, and there's some great games, so this round, for me, always... resembles one of...
Don't go anywhere, listeners. But, stay tuned. Some exciting previews for exciting matches to come.
We do. I mean, it's interesting what Aaron says, because the effect of the Easter programme is overkill, isn't it? You're overexposure.
And you're wanting to watch three games in a day.
Yeah.
But I think you can make it a celebration. I think you can make it a celebration.
There are various things you could do, but essentially what you have to do is to cut down the number of games over Easter. Yeah. The old idea of two games, Good Friday and Easter Monday, I think it's been dead for years, personally.
Six games over 4 days in Super League.
Yeah, absolutely. And that'd be really great then, wouldn't it?
Well, let's turn our attentions then to this exciting weekend to come.
Oh, yeah.
The one that Aaron's really looking forward to. Starting off with the TV game, Wigan against London. Big game for London now.
London are in an awkward one. I think they've got to make a decision now, because they've really hit a brick wall. Do they go out and gamble and spend some money to strengthen the squad and hope that has a desired effect and keep them up, or do they not do that, stick with what they've got, and I think look like they could burn out. I'm worried about London. I think they've started the season really well, but they're struggling now. Seven on the bounce.
Wouldn't it be disastrous if they went on a splurge and then still got relegated?
Yeah,
probably. Yes,
and I think that's why they will probably keep their powder dry, take yeah. the chances and take the money if the worst happens.
I mean, when you talk about them really
otherwise,
struggling...
they'd have done it in January, wouldn't they?
Anyway. Yeah, they'd have done it after they beat Leeds and they were like eighth and had, well, had won three games.
Well, when you talk about them struggling, don't forget the previous game, so the one they've just lost against Salford, was against Huddersfield at Huddersfield, and they got beaten late on by the Giants. But they still lost. But, you know, their performances are not yet that bad as they're out
you
of...
say that.
Look at, yeah, but look at it this way. 5 years ago when they were smashed out of Super League with a whimper, did they win one game all season?
They beat Leeds before Challenge Cup final.
Yeah, exactly. But that was a weakened Leeds.
And they've got three already.
No, I do agree, but does anyone believe that they can stay up with the squad they've got now?
No, I don't think so. But, I don't think so.
No, but...
But they can still perform creditably, can't they? For the most part, they have done.
Even if they signed a couple of guys from Super League clubs and a couple of journeymen from the NRL, I still think they're going down. I still think they'll be the worst team. So is it worth, like Ben says, them shelling $250,000 out on something?
For nothing,
for nothing. When they could use that money.
Hang on, we're saying that they're not far away, so surely three signings would...
I think over 29 rounds, I think they'll be the worst team by a reasonable distance.
I think OKR are as bad, if I'm honest.
They're the ones. They're the ones who London must have in their sights.
Yeah,
aren't they? If they're going to try and survive,
is it unrealistic for London to think that Wigan can still be brought back?
I'll ask me again at 10 o'clock on Thursday night, because
London have won at least.
I'll send you a text message.
Yeah, do
Wigan.
If Wigan win on Thursday, they're climbing the table, and this is the thing with East, they'll only be 2 points off of the top five, And I still maintain what I said last week, that they need to put a performance on at home, because last week they didn't, did they really? It was pretty ordinary stuff. So this is the week, I think Wigan fans will probably turn up with expectation on Thursday night that we want to be putting someone to the
Wigan,
sword.
Wigan will finish nearer the playoffs than they do the relegation. Yeah. So.
Is this the weekend where Leeds fans start to feel a bit more comfortable as well? They're travelling to Salford. Salford's home form is...
Salford.
Oh, are you going to Salford again?
No,
it's a shame. Aaron thinks that I'm a Salford fan.
Are you?
Like, he's a Wakefield fan.
Well, Leeds have already won at Salford, haven't they, in the league year?
Yeah. I do like Salford, by the way.
This is a loop fixture, isn't it?
Oh, is this one of those famous loop
fixtures? Well, it is, because they've already won there.
Yeah, they've already been
there. It's one of those crazy fixtures that's being repeated.
But...
as opposed to having 14 teams.
I think they're on... I saw them twice last week, Leeds. I saw them on Easter Monday. And I said last week, they won't be the only team to go to Wakefield and get beat. They certainly won't be the last this season. And I thought they were pretty good against OKR. All right, the last 20 minutes, OKR decided to get off the bus and make a bit of a fight of it. But for the first 50, 55, 60 minutes, Leeds were very good. They were very good. And no Hurrell as well. Merrin looks the business for me. The two hookers, Dwyer and Parcell, look like they're
Dwyer's
really on
playing
form.
Really
Dwyer's
great,
playing
isn't he?
Really well.
You Dwyer know, looks like he's playing.
He's a revelation,
contract.
Really.
Yeah.
But well, if he is, good luck to him.
You know, it's the kids that again. The kids at Leeds, and we spoke about Wigan and Leeds last week, and I, Leeds might be below Wigan in the table at the minute, but I think Leeds are further ahead or closer to being a top team than Wigan are, in the sense of they've got a good mix between experience and youth. Jack Walker's phenomenal. Harry Newman's going to be one heck of a player.
Do you think Lola here will settle at standoff?
Yeah, I think he will. Yeah, I think he was good last week. I thought Milo was good again. He gets a lot of unfair criticism when he's playing behind a poor pack. So they're in a good place. Cameron Smith looks like he's turning into a good Super League player.
Tell me if I'm wrong, but I saw a picture of Lolly from the game. He looks like he's lost some weight.
Yeah, I think he probably has. Yeah.
Don't forget
he was hooked for a couple of weeks, wasn't
he? Do we think that Lolly here maybe just thought should had no respect for Super League? Thought he was going to be a walk in the park.
Different players take different amounts of time to settle in, don't they?
I just think the weight thing. I mean, he genuinely looked like a prop at times.
I'm not sure he was that big, but. You're right, he does look slimmer now.
It's taken Dave Ferner about 10 weeks to find his best team. He probably still doesn't know it completely yet, but he's now settled on Dwyer starting games and Parcell coming off the bench. I think he'll settle with Lola here and Myler. Walker's obviously his fullback. The pack looks a little bit more settled. Cameron Smith looks pretty solid in there now. I think it might be tough for Brett Ferris to get back in. Leeds will be all right. Leeds will climb the table now. Don't forget they've got London at Magic as well. Again, not being disrespectful to London, but that's probably
that's a good draw for Leeds.
That's a very good draw for Leeds, isn't it? Yeah.
You know, this is the period Matthew was talking about a while ago, and they're doing all right. Obviously, yeah. They were beating on.
They've over Easter. I don't want to disrespect their opponents, their future opponents, but they've got a favourable cup draw next week. You know, they're playing a mid-table championship team. They're not playing Wigan away or Warrington away.
Deliberately jinxing it for Leeds.
No, not at all.
Leeds a bit late. To go on to talk about Wigan and Leeds, I think Wigan will finish above Leeds this year, but I think Wigan are entering or approaching a transitional period that Leeds have gone through and are in for a
Leeds are further years. Along that period.
Yes, they are. Yeah. Leeds.
When you factor in that Luluai, Williams, and O'Loughlin could all not be playing for Wigan next year. That is a hell of a lot of seniority to replace in one swoop.
Given what they've already lost, and Joe Burgess,
and you could argue, if you're being brutally honest. Have Leeds still managed to replace that seniority they lost in 15 and 17?
No. It's really difficult to do that, isn't
correct,
it?
Correct,
yeah. You know, particularly when you lose a lot of players all at the same time. That's the problem.
I don't think you can ever replace it. I think you can learn how to deal with it.
I think there needs to be a tempering of expectations probably around Wigan, and there's going to have to be a tough statement or a tough comment made from someone at the club saying, look, you know, this is going to be a transitional couple of years for us.
The thing about Wigan, what's really quite interesting when you look at Wigan, they produce numerous young players, don't they? And quite a lot of them have been playing recently. Yeah. But contrast them with St Helens. When St Helens bring young players into the side, as they did against the Catalans at the weekend, they just seem to play magnificently.
They absolutely pasted
the Catalans. And, you know, it wasn't that the Catalans were playing desperately badly, but these kids come in like, you know, Costello scoring three tries and so on. They look as though they were born to be there. And apparently in France this week, since that game, Bernard Gouache has been saying, how the hell does St Helens do it? It's quite remarkable.
He's not the only club asking that.
Yeah, yeah.
let's segue then. Good segue, Marty. Enjoyed it. To St Helens.
Yeah, yeah.
And St Helens travelling to Hull KR on Sunday.
Mm.
Anything for Hull KR in that one?
Damage limitations is what's in it for them.
Yeah,
the Saints rested everyone up on Monday as well, last Sunday, and that's when they looked their most vulnerable. They left Coote and Lomax out, who've been by far the best two players this season for them. Coote and Lomax have been the two stars, aren't they? Wellsby went to fullback, Farge came in with Richardson. They've got a dilemma in the sense of all three halfbacks are fit now, and Richardson's getting there again.
Yeah. Can I tell you what the dilemma that Saints have? They've got all these amazing players, and they've got these young lads who are proving that they are ready for Super League.
Adam Swift is playing well.
I've always admired him, actually.
So when did they make the jump?
Justin Albrook's got a real challenge keeping all those players at that club, because they will, if they aren't getting it. Look at Jack Wellsby. Let's take Jack Wellsby for an example.
He's a kid, though, isn't he?
Yeah, but let's just take him as an example, right? You've got Lachlan Coote. Realistically, is he going to play in front of Lachlan Coote?
Well, not for the next couple of years, no.
But he looks already Super League ready, does he not?
He doesn't look like he's ready to play 30 games, you know.
But he looks like he could play more than.
But I mean, one of the other interesting things about Saints is that they've got two overseas players, presumably quota players. I'm not sure if they are. Luke Douglas, and the other guy who's at London, Ryan Morgan, were both. Farmed out to other clubs. Yeah.
Well,
you know,
the frightening thing is that they'll have a quarter spot next year.
Yeah, yeah.
And the way that they've recruited,
and signing St Helens need to make for next season, and that's the head coach.
Mm.
Yeah,
to get him tied down, whatever he wants, however long he wants, keep him because he's
top dog, isn't he?
Yeah, and he's phenomenal.
Well, chasing Saints down in the league, we've obviously got Warrington, and that's a TV game on Friday, Castleford against Warrington. I mean, what can we say about Castleford? It's just
Chase Blair's playing. They've got no forwards.
When's this going to get started? When's it all going to?
I think Millington's back this week. I think Moores was suspended, wasn't he? So he's back. So those two alone are giving him a boost. But likes of Foster and Cook, I don't think you'll see them for a few weeks. And you know, they're not the most heralded players in the world, but they do a great job for Castleford.
Absolutely.
And in this modern era of forwards needing to play more minutes, they're the kind of guys that do a real job.
It makes you worry a little bit for Liam Watts, because the amount of minutes he's been forced to play.
If he ever gets injured, that's going to be terrible news for Castleford. Yeah. I mean, you've got to keep your fingers crossed that Watts remains healthy.
They had Bellaria Mark to come in and play right centre, and that would have meant Minikin and Clare then in a battle for the wing. But Shenton's out for 8 weeks, so is Blair now going to come in and play left centre, or are they going to move Minikin to left centre to accommodate where they see Blair long term? It's going to be a tough few weeks for Castleford, I think.
Are you worried for Castleford on Friday? Because Warrington have been pretty prolific.
I don't know. Warrington, it's difficult to know what to make of Warrington at the minute. All right.
Well, they scored 100 points in the last...
They have, but don't forget the game before that. They were surprisingly beaten at home to Salford. Yeah, Salford.
Matt's team.
And, they're a funny team in the sense of they were 19-12 behind at half-time to Huddersfield on Sunday last week, and then they just went and decided to turn up and score 38 or 90 points in the second half. Austin's obviously Austin's the difference, isn't he? If you can keep a lid on Austin, you probably give yourselves half a chance. But I suspect he, more than many others that have gone there before him, will have a field day on that small Castleford pitch.
That's what I would fear if I were a Castleford fan, that it's going to be the Blake Austin show again. He's now, incidentally, heading both the Man of Steel voting and Albert Goldthorpe medal
voting. And he's a top try scorer in the comp as well.
He's a top guy all round, isn't he?
Get him in the Great Britain team.
Yeah. Well, which he does qualify for,
doesn't
he? Certainly
does.
One place below Warrington is Hull. Hull are third.
You know what,
everyone.
It's funny.
Hull are in third.
It's funny, isn't it?
Radford out, apparently.
It's funny, people great think coach. That Hull are doing awfully, yet the third. I still think they need a freshen up.
The trouble is they keep getting beaten by the teams above them, don't they? You know.
Well, yeah, that list
is getting shorter, though.
They've been butchered by the best two teams, and I mean butchered. They were taken apart at home to Warrington, and St Helens did an absolute number on them the other week as well. But apart from that, they're the best of the rest, aren't they?
I don't know the actual facts and figures about that, but I look at their crowds. Their crowds must be up there as like one of the top three in Super League on average.
I would imagine so.
But they probably get an hard rap.
Hull are a club we don't shout enough about. They produce good kids. They've got a good coach, a good local coach. They've got a good crowd. They've got a good owner. What's not to like about Hull?
Absolutely. And actually, it's interesting you mentioned good kids, because this kid, Connor Wynn, has been catching the eye a bit at full back. Jamie Shaw's out.
You know, the ones who they spent the last, like the back end of last year, the ones who got blooded at the back end of last year, like Brad Fash, Jez Litton, Jordan Lane, you were watching them and thinking these kids aren't ready, but they've been through that tough period now and they look like Super League players.
Mm. Shall we talk about the team Hull are facing this weekend on Friday night, Catalan Dragons?
I don't care what anyone says, Catalans are underachieving. The squad they have, they should be doing better.
Well, they are sixth, level on points with Wakefield and Castleford.
Yeah, level
so,
fourth. Yeah.
You know, it's...
I don't think they're underachieving. I take your point that they spend a lot of money, but... They just can't win in England.
That doesn't stick as an excuse, because they've had long enough now to figure out how to do this. Clubs can go there. Admittedly, they have a very good record at home, but clubs can go there and win. There's no reason why they can't come over here and win.
Any chance on Friday night for them against Hull?
Yeah,
there is a chance
on paper.
What it is about Castellan Dragons, you honestly don't know what you're going to get.
No, and the thing is, they are staying in England this week, aren't they? They are in a hotel. I'm not quite sure which hotel they're staying in. But so they're giving themselves, every possible chance of doing well at Hull.
They still need to sort the Gigo Tompkins thing out.
I think Gigo at fullback, Tompkins at six, yeah.
But are they getting the best out of those two players? Is Sam Tompkins playing as well as we know he can? Has Tony Gigo been as good as he was last?
Tompkins has been very good.
Yeah.
For me, he's arguably the better game, and it will be the better game to watch on. Two entertaining teams, two teams who like to play. Albert Kelly's playing out of his skin at the minute. It's got the makings of a really good game.
It's not on Sally, though.
No. Catalans are a chance. But Hull are obviously
favourites. That's another interesting dilemma for the coach, isn't it? Lee Radford, the halfbacks at Hull. It's another 3-2 won't go. It's very much like St Helens, actually.
And Connor's going to continue to be the odd one out.
I think they're best when it's Connor and Sneed starting
and
Kelly off the bench. Because Kelly really brings something off
Connor's
the bench,
doesn't
he?
Connor's been going to fullback, hasn't he? And they've been giving Connor Wynn a breather.
Yeah, but, I, I just don't think Connor is as effective when he's not playing at standoff. I think he's a natural standoff, and I think he's one of the best in the business. So why not start with him there? The thing about Kelly, I mean, you can then move Connor to centre or fullback during the game, but when to bring Kelly on with his great footwork and speed when the opposition's tiring after, say, 30 minutes seems to me to be a great tactic. Yeah, yeah. But, you know, whether Lee Radford sees it that way, I'm not sure. Isn't it? Oh, it's always better to have too many good players than not enough. Yeah.
Well, completing the playoff picture, currently we've got fourth place Wakefield, who we've not talked about yet. They're travelling to Huddersfield on Friday night.
Huddersfield have got a bit of a rub on Wakefield, haven't they? They always...
We'll always do well against them,
yeah, especially at home.
I think Huddersfield probably need to win it more than Wakefield of their own fans. Yeah. And I mean Huddersfield are a strange side because, as you say, they were beating Warrington 19-12 at half time.
Yeah,
that's not bad,
still,
is it?
Huddersfield are very much collapsed. Like a number of teams in this competition where they've proven
they can't put it together for 80 minutes.
They've proven that they are capable of achieving great. No, they haven't. They haven't. They've proven they're...
They beat Cass at home.
They've proven they're capable of achieving standalone great performances. Mm. I don't think they've proven, and there's a number of clubs in this bracket, they haven't proven to anyone that they are a viable...
Yeah, they've had five wins so far, two of them against London. You know, they've beaten Wakefield as well.
Without Gaskell, I said it many times. Mm. I think they're a far, far better team with Gaskell. You know, and they're not the only team who's as reliant
and Gaskell
on one individual.
Gets injured quite a lot,
but,
unfortunately.
Yeah, without Gaskell,
they miss Leroy Cudjoe. I've said this several times. I think he's such a.
There's no indication yet on when he's going to be.
Well,
back.
I mean, he's been close for nearly all season, apparently, pretty much.
But a win for Huddersfield and a defeat for Hull KR in London, and it suddenly starts to look a bit more.
There's going to be. Huddersfield will be fine over 29 weeks. I don't doubt that for a second.
And there's still only 4 points outside the top five. Yeah. So
there's only two clubs are going to get split, and they're Hull KR.
I just want Huddersfield to break this cycle of recent years, and I'm sure they will this time around, of sacking a coach mid-season, bringing a coach in, having a spurt in form, and then doing the same again the following summer.
It's kind of different this year because you don't have to try and avoid the bottom four, do you?
Wolford's been here for a year now, and you know you've got to give him at least another to sort of establish what he's trying to put in place on and off the field.
You can't keep sacking coaches in a salary cap sport. No, you can't do it because that coach brings his own players in on multi-year
deals.
And
the new coach doesn't want
them. And then the other...
just a bit of patience at Huddersfield. They're not going to go down. The sooner they get their heads around, obviously, the sooner they get their heads around that, the better it'll be for everyone.
I think they know that, don't they? They know that. They felt inclined that results weren't going well enough that they had to move the coaches on.
And I like Wolford. I think he says
just
a lot.
Honest,
yeah,
isn't he?
He's a good coach. He's well respected, well thought of. I think he's a man for them long term.
Yeah, I agree.
Let's talk about the Championship. Toronto's crowd against Swinton.
Brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely brilliant. Massive credit to them. No
Quite
doubt.
Remarkable that it was the first home game, wasn't it?
Three tickets.
Oh, Matt, stop. Right, we get it.
Yeah.
Three tickets. We get it. You're on board with Toronto and you don't like it when people say they give away free tickets. We get it, right?
Just don't see why it's a problem. People are saying they're lying about the attendance as well.
Wow. No one in this room is.
No, yeah. There are a lot of people.
I mean, they were helped by a travelling Swinton crowd, just to say as well.
Yeah. They were very loud on the TV.
How many did they take?
I think Ian Rigg, who was obviously very close to it, I think he said there was just under 100.
Wow.
That's great. It's a long way to travel, isn't it?
Well, Bradford, I don't think it's any great secret, but speaking of Bradford the other day, they reckon they're taking about 600 fans.
That's tremendous, isn't it?
But it's good that clubs like Swinton and Bradford are stepping up, because otherwise, Toronto are just going to say, you know, you bring no away fans.
If Bradford are taking another, let's say it's another 500, hopefully they're a chance of beating that crowd again.
Can I just say one thing about Toronto? Thank goodness they're playing on Saturday.
No more Sunday night kickoffs.
Sunday night kickoffs at 7 o'clock. Well, actually, we got the report done, and, you know.
I didn't enjoy it. Mark pestering me every 30 seconds. Yeah. Where's the report?
Yeah. You know, but it certainly delayed us from going to the printer, so, you know.
I mean, just to say that game this weekend against Bradford, I say this in the Championship show, but it is box office. I mean,
it certainly is.
Yeah. I think it'll be a fairly one-sided result. I think, you know, history has shown that teams you know, teams find it tough going to Toronto and winning, unless you're London Broncos, obviously. But
it would be interesting to know, wouldn't it, whether the Toronto fans, the people coming through the gate, have a vision of the clubs that they're playing against.
Yeah, recognise that it's Bradford, for example.
I mean, Swinton, for example, I can't imagine many of them.
No, but Swinton, I talked to someone from Toronto this week, and Swinton are helped by the fact they put Manchester on the badge.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, that's good.
Toronto, Bradford will become the favourite club of Toronto thus far because of how good Bradford's travelling support are, in terms of numbers and in noise. And they love that, the Canadians. So Bradford
would be a great day, yeah. It'd be a great experience.
Well, Bradford did win last weekend, as did Featherstone. Lee, Toulouse had a bit of a ding-dong, that's hashtag ding-dong, with York. And well played, Liam Finn and Dewsbury there against Widnes. Superb. But we can't leave our look at the Championship without talking about Richard Marshall and Halifax.
I knew you'd be looking at me.
Well, Martin, what do you think? Simon Grick's coming in on a temporary basis before he's probably made permanent.
It looks a very harsh decision, doesn't it, with Richard Marshall? And I can only imagine that Richard Marshall will bounce back somewhere else fairly quickly. Because, you know, his record as a whole at Halifax is a really good one.
He doesn't need to rush, does he?
No. But they've been, in many respects, the best performing, non-full-time.
Pound for pound, I think they have, yeah. I think they've outperformed some full-time teams.
During the Super 8s, he got them in the top four most of the time, didn't he? In the Championship.
3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
I think one thing you can say for Richard Marshall is, and anyone who's sort of had any experience with him, you'll struggle to meet a more professional, nice person than him. I think the biggest compliment you can give the job he's done at Halifax is he's left a legacy, not only with the performances on the field in first grade, but that reserve grade. I think 12 have come through it. I think between them they made 268 appearances for the club under his watch. Five of them went on to become international players. Saved the club a hell of a lot of money financially as a result of that. Gained them a lot of people would, tell me if I'm wrong, would say that Halifax was sort of, everyone had a soft spot for Halifax because of the way they were doing things. He's from Bradford, he don't count. I think he has left a legacy, and I think when a coach can do that at a club, then you've got to say they've done a successful job. From Halifax's perspective, on the face of it, it's an interesting call. What they've done is they've promoted from within.
They've won from one. They won at Sheffield, didn't they? So thus far,
48 hours later, they've brought a coach in who's worked under Richard Marshall. Who's worked similarly to when Richard came in good places. He was obviously at Warrington for a long time and worked with them from a coaching perspective.
And that's important for what you were saying about all the kids who've come through, because they need to continue that. They can't just abandon that.
What clubs need cultures, don't they? Yeah. Culture is a big word in rugby league now, a trendy word, but you need a culture. I think what they've done is they've promoted from within someone who understands the culture. Don't forget, he's from Halifax.
Yeah. It's interesting, earlier we were talking about youth development with St Helens. Mm. Richard Marshall, surely, is ripe for a role at a Super League club to do kind of work.
I'd be surprised if Richard Marshall don't have a coaching job in some capacity.
Bearing in mind that we're presumably going to have a reserve grade competition next year, with clubs wanting coaches for those reserve grade sides, Richard Marshall would be my choice. You know, if I were,
I think
setting
he's
up
past that though, hasn't he?
Well, the thing about somebody like him is, you've got to work out what's the best way to get a first-grade Super League gig. And, you know, there are not many people who can do a Darryl Powell and go from a Championship club to a Super League club to coach at first-grade level. Most coaches would imagine, British coaches at least, would tend to come up through, you know, a bit like Danny Ward has done at London. He coached the academy and then got the gig, you know, when it became available. And I think, you know, I could see Richard Marshall doing that at a Super League club.
I think one thing to summarise, you could say that Richard Marshall's probably been a victim of his own success at Halifax. Is that fair?
Yes, because, he aroused high expectations.
Yeah.
And then, you know, when they've struggled a bit this season at various times.
Without trying to upset people that I know, I think that Halifax fans have got a really unrealistic idea of where their that club should be in terms of what they're spending and where they think they should finish.
Well, at the moment, they're 2 points outside the top five, which isn't bad, is it?
They're one of the best part-time clubs in the Championship, aren't they?
And have been for years. And if they hadn't have messed up against Bradford on Good Friday, they'd have been joint fourth.
What's really interesting about the Championship, though, this year, and I think I've said this before, is that you don't often get a situation where the two promoted sides from the previous season are actually challenging for honours. And yet you've got a situation now where Bradford are in fourth and York are in sixth, you know, which sort of complicates the Championship a bit, doesn't it? Because, it's pushed a side like Halifax down to eighth.
And Sheffield, you know, Resurgence.
Sheffield Resurgence.
Best of luck to Richard Marshall for the future. Also, Cal Forster at Rochdale, he's a very... I mean, I don't want to get too embroiled in this, but he wasn't there for the Bradford match. Rumours galore, statements being put up and then taken down. It's...
I think you can summarise the whole thing with one word, which is shambolic. Like, why would you put a statement up on and then take it down? And the whole thing is so odd. And on a wider point, I'm sure we'll get on to Leon Price as well.
Yeah.
I think Rochdale and Workington have probably panicked. Without knowing the ins and outs, but on the face of it, a club's looking at New York and Otterham coming in and thinking
they're stuck in League One. If they're in League One at the kickoff next season, they're going to be in there for the next three seasons.
So if Workington looked at it, think we need to go up this year. If Rochdale gone, we have to stay up this year and pulled the trigger early.
So Cal Foster and Rochdale, we'll keep an eye on that. TotalOL.com when any news is broken on that, and then officially removed and then brought back again. We'll keep an eye on it.
So weird.
Let's talk about League One. Where do we start? We've obviously got Hector McNeil coming on in a second because Oldham won. Newcastle Thunder and Whitehaven drew 12 apiece. Keighley got another win. That sends them up to -1 now, everybody. That's only top, 7 points from the playoff positions.
And top if they hadn't have had the points taken off.
The crowds are arguably as impressive, if not more impressive, at Keighley than I think the public have really bought back into it as well, which is great.
But Craig Lingard there has done a very underrated job, hasn't he, with that squad?
Yeah.
When you think what a late start he had.
Yeah. The calibre of squad they were putting together, and a lot of players from amateur clubs and players released by League One clubs, you're thinking, wow, it's a good job there's no relegation into the NCL because they'd be struggling. But, they've clawed almost all of that back now, so within a month they'll probably be above, two or three teams just hovering around them.
Calling themselves a misfits, aren't they?
Yes. Off the playoffs, are they?
Seven. It's doable.
Well, they've caught five up in seven games, so by that logic, they'd make it.
It's also doable as well when suddenly the expansion clubs suddenly start going, we're going to have a bit of this year. And that's what's happened last weekend with North Wales Crusaders firstly beating Doncaster at the Keep Moat. Anthony Murray, pressure was on after that defeat to Fatawi Crusaders. Yeah. And, look at them now, blimey. A fantastic victory there. And also, where do we start with this one? London Scholars beating Hunslet by 42 points to 26 at the South Leeds Stadium. Yeah. Like I said, we will get Hector McNeil
third,
in a second.
Third place, highest ever position, I would think, London Scholars, surely, at this stage of the season.
Since the restructure of League One, I'd suggest, definitely.
Incredible. Good on him.
Brilliant, yeah.
Good on him. I
hope they stay in the race, absolutely.
Well, let's hear now from London Scholars, because, they are in the sunlight, so let's give them even more sunlight now. And on Monday, I caught up with the founder of the club and director, here's Hector McNeil.
We were relatively surprised away. I mean, we've been playing very well. I mean, obviously, it's our third win on the trot. We're obviously travelling away to the top of the league and, long journey. You expect to be up against it. And even at half-time, I think, where we... I think we were 18-12 up just before the blow, and they scored. Didn't get the conversion over, fortunately. Thought that we were back to where we were before, because for the last couple of years we've been really good at playing half, but not good at playing both halves. But I think the lads, blew themselves away and blew Hunslet away and blew me away really in the second half and put them to the sword. So you're quite right. That's what we've been waiting for.
It's three straight wins now. Obviously, the Battle of the South game against Coventry, but you also beat Workington as well. So, have you been surprised with recent results, or is this an accumulation of some great work that's been put in behind the scenes by yourself and Jermaine and everyone at the club?
Yeah, well, I think to be honest, I think we felt the previous three seasons, this one, we've sort of not really pushed on. We've shown a lot of promise. We've got a lot of talent. I've always felt player for player, we have as much talent as anybody else, but I think it's the mental toughness and it's the rugby league nous really that I think we've always suffered from. But I think, you know, obviously with the club working with Toronto, you know, putting a bit more money in, you know, ourselves, and also looking to bring it, you know, bring that rugby league now scene either from overseas or from up north, you know, seems to be paying dividends. I mean, it's still early days. I mean, we're still only 7 games into the season, you know, so the challenge for us now is to make that the norm, not the exception, you know. But obviously, momentum's a great thing, you know, and winning is a habit, and hopefully we can carry on with lots of bunch of key cliches there to see it through, mate, really. But, you know, we certainly do need to do that week in, week out, I think, to prove ourselves as real contenders.
And you mentioned the investment from Toronto. What's that going to mean for the Scholars going forward? Because it's not just about on the pitches, it's also about the structures off the pitch and carrying on that great work. Because I think a lot of people have to remember that the Scholars have been around for quite a long time now.
Yeah, funny enough, it's our 25th year next year, actually. You know, born on the Centenary Rugby League, which I think, hopefully, in another 25 years' time, you know, when we're the Barcelona equivalent of rugby league, people will see that as a momentous day, you know. But the funny thing with the Toronto, I mean, we actually haven't had any of the money yet, but ultimately the money and the investment so far has come from the current directors and actually, thankfully, from Richard Griffin, one of our you know, great supporters, who's put a bit of money in as well. So from that perspective, that's pushed on. But I think, you know, I don't know what you feel, but I feel that Toronto's reinvigorated the game, personally. I think, you know, watching them play on the weekend and seeing that packed stadium and the sun shining and, you know, the atmosphere, to me, it showed the way forward. And working with David Argyle and his staff, you know, John Pallett, who's a great guy, Martin Vickers, who's a great guy, you know, Rebecca, his sister, you know, they're all very infectious. And I think that's sort of given us a rebirth, because I've had, you know, 25 years on the trot of this stuff. You know, so it's hard to keep going, you know, and but I think when you get a breath of fresh air with results like this and working with new partners, it you know, it really does help.
We see that as well with what the Scholars do. I mean, we hear a lot now about the event culture of the sport, and the Scholars have embraced that. And we saw the doubleheader a few weeks ago with Toronto taking on Sheffield. We also see that in coming events like the London Nines and with the Norway Greece International as well. That's all important, isn't it, for seeing what the London Scholars are all about?
Yeah, no, I think it is. I mean, the funny thing about that Toronto doubleheader, there was actually 8 games played at New River that day. You know, it was almost, I think, bigger than the Magic weekend. You know, so we're very proud of that, you know, from juniors all the way to masters, you know, with a couple of professional games slammed in the middle. So, you know, we're a big believer in that, and we feel that, you know, one of our biggest challenges, and probably where we underperform, you know, I think is probably getting bums on seats. But we pretty much can do it in events, you know, where we put something on like Friday Night Lights or Capital Challenge or these double headers or whatever. But, you know, it's week in, week out, you know. I mean, we have a sort of internal target to have 500 on average per game. That's really where we want to get to, you know, as our sort of first stage of our growth story. That's still to be achieved. So that's what we really need to do. But I think the only way you do that nowadays is giving people some reason to come and some reason to come back again. You know, that's important as well. And we're obviously in the shadow of that unbelievable new stadium at Spurs, you know. So we've got a lot of competition on the doorstep for bums on seats. But we're a little bit cheaper, a little bit better value, I think, and a little bit more family orientated. So hopefully that comes through in the local community.
Absolutely. And like you said about all the teams that the London Scholars have, London Broncos are currently started the season off really well, but currently sitting bottom of the table. You're in the playoffs, 2 divisions below. You could theoretically be in the same division next season. I'm not going to, I know you're going to say you'd rather walk before you can run and that kind of thing, but that is a possibility now. So where do you see the Scholars in the next 5 years, and do you think London could benefit greatly as a rugby league city, having the likes of not just the Broncos doing well, but also the Scholars?
Yeah, no, I do personally. I think it needs that depth. You know, it's a massive city, London, you know, and we all see that the NFL's got a strategy to be there. Other sports, I mean, Saracens have signed, a 5-year contract to play a game a season at the new White Hart Lane. You know, so we can't take this market for granted, and I think we're only scratching the surface of it so far. And, you know, London needs a top-quality Super League team, and it needs, you know, in my opinion, it needs teams at all the levels, you know, whether it's Championship, League One, and the rest. And you know, I think we often, you know, make the mistake of conflating the South East with London as well, you know. So for me, you know, Hemel isn't London, Oxford isn't London, Cheltenham is not London, you know, Coventry isn't London. You know, London is itself, it's a 10 million people market, you know, we're in, in Haringey, which has got 400,000 people in it, you know, so it's bigger than Bradford, you know, is Haringey itself, you know. And it's an economy three times the size of Sweden and Switzerland, and, you know, it's got one of the youngest populations in Europe, if it was a country in its own right. So we have to be here. You know, Man United and Man City have their commercial headquarters in London. They don't have it in Manchester. You know, so as a game, you know, we've got to have the presence here. The only thing I would, you know, slightly complain about is often we're seen as the guys that not only have to develop our clubs, but we also have to support the sport down here, because we're not impacted by that M62 ecosystem, you know, that exists up there, you know. And I know there's limited dollars, you know, to be spent in rugby league generally, but, you know, we do feel sometimes, you know, we're fighting a long fight down here to establish a sport. But certainly, you know, I wish the Broncos well, and I don't want to play them, you know, next year, you know, but I do want to be in the Championship. So I'd like them to stay in the Super League and for us to work our way up, you know. And you asked about 5 years, you know, hopefully we can put scholars in the shop window and attract new investors as we've done this time round, and hopefully we'll be vying for Super League at some point as well.
Absolutely. And you mentioned the potential in London and the population as well. It's a proper world city, a melting pot of a city, loads of cultures, loads of nationalities. Obviously, you've got Jermaine Coleman as your head coach. He's also the head coach of the Jamaican side. We've had Ade on from the Nigerian Rugby League. And an interesting fact as well, Hector, you're involved with the Ghanaian Rugby League as well. And that's where there's also potential there in London too.
Yeah, no, it is. It's funny. The scholars have got, you know, we're a bit like the Catholic Church, you know, full of missionaries, really. And you know, we got Jermaine, but also, funny enough, Addy's an ex-scholars player as well, right? So, you know, he's done that. And Scott in Sweden is an ex-scholars player. You know, we've got pretty much part of the Norwegian Foundation as well. So we've always been involved in that. And, you know, myself and John Risman were also the guys who originally got Scotland Rugby League off the ground as well. So we've always been ones that want to bring the game to different areas. And, you know, I have a bit of a pet story about Ghana, because my wife's from, she's actually born in England, but her parents are Ghanaian. So I've always had a lot of time for the country, you know, great people, you know, very stable and democratic, great sports people. So, you know, the last few years I've been helping the RLEF establish the game over there. And, you know, they've got a 5-team league going on now, you know, and our sister club, Lagon Scholars, is one of the premier teams there. And we're working with Addy as well to enter a West Africa United team in the London Nines, with a view that that's the launch for exile teams, Ghanaian and Nigerian exile teams in the UK. So if there's any players out there that are interested in representing the West African United, you know, then drop an email to the Scholars Club and we'll follow that up and work with them. But I certainly think we can get ourselves in as a sport over there and compete with other sports. You know, rugby union is still very nascent and young there, you know, so we can we can fund up pretty well against that, I think.
Absolutely. And just before you go, Hector, as well, just a quick mention, speaking of the international game, for that Norway-Greece match, that's coming up. There's news reports about the game in Greece and the struggles it's going through at the moment. This is going to be very, very welcome, this game, and also it's tying in with those events at the New River too.
Yeah, it is. And what's really exciting about it is, I'd say half of my friends are Greek Londoners, you know, the North London area. I mean, we're very close to Wood Green and Palmer's Green, and you know, their nicknames around us is Palmer's Greek and Wood Greek. So I think there's 300,000 Greek and Greek Cypriots around that area. So we're very excited about it. We've got London Greek Radio involved, Greek Embassy, you know, the Norwegian Embassy. Funny enough, the day before the match, it's Norwegian Day, which is their annual nation celebration day. They've got a 5,000 people celebration going on in South London, so we're hoping to promote it to those guys. So so expecting a bumper crowd. And I would say anybody that's got, you know, real interest in the international game should get to it, because it should be a cracking day. Plus, as well, you get you know, Scholars versus Doncaster in League One, you know, all for £15, you know, so it's fantastic you know, value. But should be one of those where you say, oh, I was there for that, you know. Should be a cracking day, I think.
So Hector McNeil there speaking to us, speaking to me on Monday from the London Scholars, and it's all good stuff at the Scholars. Can we have two London sides in the Championship
London
next
Derby,
season?
Yeah, London Derby.
There's no doubt about it. Yeah.
Do we need more London sides?
Could we have two David Argyle teams in there?
Because there's, there's 10 million... we always gone about the market of Toronto. London is 10 million people, and all we've got at the moment is a team in North London and a team in West London.
I think it'd be marvellous to have a team in South London and one in East London and maybe one in Central London even, you know. But I think we've got to get both sides that are there at the moment hitting their straps, first of all, before we can talk about more clubs being set up there. But it would be nice, wouldn't it? You know, you look at how many major football clubs there are in London. You know, there
It's like Hector was saying there, it's not just the London clubs. United and City have got their commercial operations in London. So. Anyway, that's nearly it for this week's show. But just a couple of matters arising and any other business. New reserve comp, is that happening?
Looks to be doing, doesn't it? Looks to it's a step further.
And the road to Wembley starts here this weekend as well, with the 1895 Cup kicking off in the first round.
That is so unpredictable now, isn't it? To decide who's going to make it to Wembley, isn't that?
It depends if London Scholars keep going with the promotion race, doesn't it?
Tell you what the interesting game is in that competition this weekend, Newcastle Thunder versus Keighley Cougars. Because Keighley might think they've not got really much chance of, you know, getting promotion. Yeah. But they have got a chance of winning this cup. And, you know, if they can go up to Newcastle and win.
I'm not sure if they've got a chance of winning it.
You know, but they might see that as their only chance, really, of, you know, being able to target any silverware.
There is the luck of the draw, of course. And, you could sneak your way around some of the championship clubs. And even
I'd put quite a lot of money on a League One club not making the final.
So would I. But, you know, as I'm saying, from Keithley's point of view, you know, it's a competition that looks more viable than the League
One. I'm not sure about that. I think they could make the playoffs.
Back chat. This week?
Yeah.
Last week's was good on tour at Featherstone.
Thank you. We're staying there. So we've got on Derek Beaumont, Dave Peat, agent who is Richard Marshall's agent, coincidentally, so that was discussed about quite a lot. And last but not least, by no means, the Wakefield CEO, Michael Carter, who, again, gave some fair insight into Super League's perspective on certain things and also acknowledge those Chris Chester Wigan rumours.
Martin, League Express, anything
happening? Well, current edition of League Express, a nice tribute to Neil Fox, the great Neil Fox, who celebrates his 80th birthday this Saturday, May the 4th. Certainly one of the greats, one of the real greats of rugby league, I think.
And Aaron, just before we go, anything happening in your world with League Express and The Guardian and that kind of thing?
Oh, yeah, loads. Just pick up a paper and buy one and find out. Yeah. Keep us on the job.
Yeah, this is the whole point. Yeah, you give a little bit of breadcrumbs and then people go on.
Oh, it's some rugby league news. You know, a bit of transfer gossip in League Express, always interesting.
The best informed guy in the game, Aaron, of course.
Well, for all your gossip and breaking news, totalrl.com, place to go, and obviously buy paper as well. Martin Sadler, big thank you for joining us.
Pleasure.
Aaron Bauer, always a pleasure. And Matthew Shaw, thanks for joining us. And wherever you're going this weekend, make sure you have fun. Bye-bye.